You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. My guest is Bryce Dole, a politics reporter for Oregon Public Broadcasting. He's been covering a whirlwind 5 weeks in Salem. Oregon lawmakers officially gaveled out of the 2026 short legislative session last week after a 35-day sprint that saw major policy shifts, intense partisan standoffs, and the first full gathering of the public, press, and politicians in a newly renovated state capitol building. Bryce, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hey, Mike.
So tell me, what was it like in the building at the end of the session? How did it all wrap up?
Yeah, well, despite all of the no shortage of politically charged issues that lawmakers took up this year, there just wasn't the same level of drama that Salem has seen in recent years, especially. In fact, when lawmakers gaveled out on the final day I was there, they opened up the doors of both chambers, and they all walked out into the newly renovated rotunda. And lawmakers, even of opposing parties, they were laughing and snapping photos and hugging, which feels kind of unique for today's politics. I mean, don't get me wrong, there were a lot of very contentious debates this session, but things just ended pretty peacefully, and leaders of both parties said after Sine died that they were pretty satisfied with the bills that they passed in just over a month, which there were so many bills. There were a lot of bills.
Well, it sounds like a lot of good-hearted energy. I know that lawmakers entered this session facing a $650 million budget shortfall. So how did they manage to close that gap?
Well, to take a step back a little bit, you know, the Democrats obviously blame this shortfall largely on revenue lost due to changes in the federal tax code brought by the president's One Big Beautiful Bill. So for one, what they did was that they eliminated a set of federal tax breaks essentially to raise money, more than $300 million for the state's general fund. This was a pretty hotly debated topic, in large part because lawmakers of opposing parties couldn't really agree on whether this was essentially a tax hike, but lawmakers also saw a better revenue forecast than I think a lot of them were anticipating, and that was able to help fill the rest of the gap. In addition to, they kept state positions vacant, and they slashed some agency budgets for supplies and that kind of thing.
Okay, so removing that federal partner forced the state to focus on things that they can control. Can you explain why fixing the budget deficit was such a flashpoint between Oregon Democrats and Republicans?
Well, I think it always is, right? But I think a lot of the debate now centers on what exactly is to blame, right? Like, the Republicans say that much of this shortfall and the budget struggles that the state has been facing is, you know, at least owed in part to the state government growing too large with too many programs, that there's too much spending that Oregonians can't afford in our current cost of living situation throughout the state. And basically, they argue that the state hasn't been accountable for how much money it's been using. The Democrats on the other side, like I said, would blame the president and his allies for shrinking federal spending, kind of reshaping the federal government's role and cutting back on social safety net programs that are meant to help, you know, vulnerable people, things like SNAP and Medicaid and that sort of thing.
Okay, so it sounds like on one side, Oregon has grown too big, too bloated, and we need to rein it in. And on the other side, we have a lot of needs. And there are a lot of problems here that need funding at all levels, particularly among our most vulnerable populations. Well, a major theme for the Democratic majority was protecting Oregonians from federal immigration crackdowns.
That's right.
Tell me about House Bill 4138.
Yeah, so this bill would essentially prevent federal immigration officers from wearing masks. It's a response to, like you said, to the president's nationwide deportation efforts and the deportation efforts going on through ICE. This would require officers to clearly display, one, their name or identifying number or their agency and their badge. It also limits the use of face coverings that conceal a person's identity, but it does make some exceptions for, you know, if an officer is doing undercover work or have other health and safety needs. Basically, like, the proponents behind this bill, they make the argument that citizens deserve to know if they're being arrested or detained or if they're questioned, who the officer is, right? You know, it's in response to all of the videos that we've been seeing throughout the country over the last couple of months of mass immigration officials making arrests. And critics just argue that, you know, this tactic that ICE has been using can prevent accountability for an officer's actions. But what's interesting is it's not clear exactly at this point what's going to happen with this bill. The Trump administration is challenging a similar law in a federal court in I think this is California. A federal judge has ruled that the state there can't ban just federal agents from wearing masks, but that same judge appeared to suggest that the ban on masks could be upheld if it was applied to all officers, including local and state police officers, not just the federal government. So I think there's still some unanswered questions here.
Well, that does make sense. Now, what's the status of this bill? Did it pass?
It did pass.
Okay. So I know that lawmakers are also battling over rescheduling a vote on a 2025 gas tax and transportation package. Mm-hmm.
Right. This was probably the most contentious bill of the session. And just to recap, Democrats, they passed new taxes and fees specifically to fill, you know, these big funding gaps at ODOT and other transportation agencies, including a 6-cent hike on gas taxes. In response, Republicans, they went out, they gathered hundreds of thousands of signatures from Oregonians to get this tax on the ballot, to let voters have their say as to whether or not they want this tax right now or not, or whether they want the state to go back and find a different plan. So, yeah, that vote was supposed to happen in the November general election. But the Democrats argued in Salem, basically, look, like we can't wait that long, and the state and the ODOT can't wait that long to address this issue. The state needs to pass a bill to move the vote to May. But Republicans obviously hate that idea because it would, they argue, essentially insulate a lot of Democrats who are up for re-election from running on the same ballot as their own gas tax increase. And that tax increase is widely expected to fail among a lot of observers, political observers. And among those Democrats who are running is Governor Tina Kotecz. She's up for re-election in the fall. So Republicans have filed a lawsuit to block that move, keep the vote in November. And actually, just yesterday, we learned that a judge is expected to rule on this issue around whether or not they can move that vote. The judge is expected to rule sometime this week. So we'll see what we learn.
Okay, so this is a battle over politics, over perception. If this vote happens or if this issue is around in November, then the public has one perception. If it's moved to May, then it's irrelevant in the November election.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, you know, I think a lot of Republicans would argue, you know, like the optics are not good for the majority party right now. You know, the idea that they want to pass a gas tax and an increase on fees at a time when a lot of Oregonians are struggling with high housing costs, high cost of living, high grocery costs. And they just, you know, say, like, look, the Democrats are trying to protect themselves in the election. But, I mean, if you look at it from the Democrat side, too, like, you know, ODOT is facing hundreds of layoffs, which they're trying to address right now. And so I think it's just a politically difficult situation. I don't think the Democrats want that to happen, those layoffs. And so they think, you know, and they've been working on this issue for a year and a half. They're trying to find a solution. So we'll see what happens.
And now with the war in Iran, gas prices have skyrocketed. My guest is Bryce Dole, a politics reporter with OPB. He covered the Oregon legislature's 35-day short session. So, Bryce, the Oregon Department of Transportation is still facing this massive funding gap. So how's the state planning to keep the agency afloat for the next 18 months?
Yeah, so it was a more than $300 million funding shortfall, right? A huge gap. Again, they similar to what they did with the other gap in the state budget, they left some vacant positions open. But much of the gap they made up for by taking funds from programs that make roads safer for, for pedestrians, that make bridges safer from earthquakes, or are supposed to do those things, that are supposed to fund rail projects, you know, charge electric vehicles and help with electric with vehicle electrification, programs like that. Lawmakers, in the long run, though, they don't think that these cuts are sustainable, and they plan to revisit them sometime in the future.
Well, it sounds like, as my mother used to say, they rob Peter to pay Paul.
I think a lot of Republicans might agree. A lot of Democrats might agree with you on that sentiment.
Well, lawmakers also had several bills on their list intended to support businesses and economic development. One of those bills protects outdoor recreation businesses from liability, including ski resorts like Mount Ashland right here.
Right.
Can you tell us why lawmakers took this on and what changed?
Yeah, this was actually one of the bills I covered the most this session. So before the session, ski resorts, gyms, rafting companies, all of these health, recreation, and fitness groups have been saying that they have been facing surging insurance premiums that are making it harder and harder to run their businesses. And they placed the blame on an Oregon Supreme Court ruling. This was back in 2014. And the ruling essentially invalidated they invalidated liability waivers. And these waivers, your listeners probably know a lot about them, but just to recap, you know, you sign them to acknowledge that if you're going to a gym, you're going to a ski resort, you acknowledge that you're taking a risk and you're not going to sue a business for ordinary negligence. But without these waivers, businesses have said that they've been opened up repeatedly to frivolous lawsuits, that insurance companies don't want to do business in Oregon, and that has caused their insurance rates to rise. So this bill saw really extensive negotiations between lawmakers, industry leaders, and trial attorneys around basically how to keep the health and recreation industry vibrant, which is a multi-billion dollar industry, while also preserving Oregonians' rights to sue those businesses in extreme circumstances or you know, if they were injured in certain circumstances. So the bill that they ultimately passed, it does provide some exceptions for people to sue a business, even if they sign a waiver. But overall now, these waivers enforceable in the state.
Now say that last part again. You cut out just a little bit.
Yeah, the waivers now are broadly enforceable in Oregon. Basically, they didn't have a lot of legal teeth, and now they do.
Okay, so we've got a couple of minutes left. I know that lawmakers passed House Bill 4018 to provide technical fixes to campaign finance limits, but it drew sharp criticism from groups who felt kind of shut out of the process. Quickly, what's in this bill, and what's motivating good government groups to threaten a ballot referendum in 2028?
Sure. The goal of the bill was, one, to set up and roll out the political contribution limits that lawmakers had promised back in 2024. They want to roll out this bill that they passed in the last short legislative session. But the Oregon Secretary of State has said that version of the law was really flawed and the state just needed more time and money to make it happen, or else the state was at risk of botching the rollout of the law. So lawmakers made a number of changes to make that happen. But campaign finance reform advocates said, one, they were boxed out of the crafting of the bill, and that it was crafted largely by the big political spenders, including business groups and unions, you name it. They basically, campaign finance reform advocates basically said that this bill included so many loopholes that they're worried that it will open the door for spenders to just basically keep flooding elections in Oregon with money as they have in the past. The bill supporters obviously dispute that. So on the floor, you had a lot of lawmakers who were saying openly, look, like we're reluctant to vote for this bill, but we feel like we're stuck between a rock and a hard place because, if we don't pass the bill and provide the Secretary of State a little bit more time to, for example, set up a system to track spending, then the rollout is going to be a disaster. So lawmakers, ultimately, they promised to keep working on the bill in the next session. They even passed a bill requiring the Secretary of State to come back with new recommendations. But again, the bill does set those contribution limits in place by next year, which will be the first time that Oregon's had those in some time.
Okay, there's so many other questions I have. I know some bills didn't make it through, and unfortunately, we don't have any time to talk about that. Thank you so much, Bryce.
Thanks, Mike.
My guest was Bryce Dole, OPB politics reporter.